It's the second day of the second impeachment trial of former President Donald Trump. And it's the week in Washington where we take a look at several top stories in national politics. In addition to the impeachment, we'll talk about the status of President Joe Biden's COVID recovery and aid proposal and new criminal investigations into Donald Trump in Georgia. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What responses do you have to yesterday's opening of the Senate impeachment trial and the arguments from House impeachment managers so far today? Have you been watching the managers make that case? Has what you've seen or heard changed your mind at all? What are you hoping that senators do? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. Adam Woldner is deputy editor for McClatchy, D.C. He's from Wisconsin, by the way. Adam, welcome back to Central Time.
Hey, thanks so much for having me back on. Hope you all are staying nice and warm out there.
Well, it's not easy. We're trying. It's very cold.
Yeah. But
it will be for a while. You're keeping track. Yeah. Before we dig into some of the particulars in this impeachment trial, your general thoughts, your reactions so far, Adam, to what you've seen?
Yeah, so we're now in day two here of the Senate's impeachment trial, as you've mentioned. And so far today, we've mostly been getting, the Democratic side of things. The House impeachment managers are laying out their case against former President Trump here so far today. I'm really trying to build the timeline here in order to make the argument that President Trump did incite this mob that stormed the Capitol a little over a month ago, and, you know, making the case, even dipping back into some of his comments in the lead up to the election all the way through to January 6th, trying to show that timeline through videos, through speeches, through tweets, trying to construct this narrative that Trump was indeed responsible for this attack. So that's mostly what we've seen so far today. And eventually here we're going to get Trump's lawyers and his defense, their side of things. But, we're going to, this is just day two. This is going to continue through the week and likely into early next week.
Let's give a little listen to something from yesterday. One of the president's lawyers, David Schoen, talking yesterday about more of the procedural side of things, something that Republican senators have pointed to when it comes to the constitutionality of the impeachment proceeding itself. Here's a listen.
It is a clear denial of due process and fair trial rights for private citizen Trump to face an impeachment trial so conducted by the Senate. The impeachment article should be treated as a nullity and dismissed based on the total lack of due process in the House. It should be dismissed because of Speaker Pelosi's intentional abandonment or waiver of jurisdiction, if the House ever acquired jurisdiction. And the article should be dismissed because the trial in the Senate of a private citizen is not permitted.
And Adam, that's something that some Republican senators have focused on a lot. It's been brought to a vote, the idea of whether or not it's constitutional to impeach a not sitting president, but former president. How much have Republicans been leaning on that argument?
Very heavily, right? You don't actually hear them much, trying to defend any of Trump's actions or speeches that the Democrats are referring to. They're just taking the argument of it doesn't even really matter so much the case that Democrats are bringing, because this trial shouldn't even be happening. Their argument being that now that Donald Trump is out of office, a former president, he cannot be tried for impeachment. Certainly a debate that I think, most constitutional scholars do agree that this is still constitutional, particularly since he was actually impeached by the House while he was still president. The actions, these were actions that he took while he was president. And it's just now that the trial is happening that he's out of office. But, you have heard some constitutional scholars on the right sort of make that argument. And that's what Republicans are leaning on. And that's really been the big divide already at this moment, where Republicans and Democrats really don't even agree on really the grounds of this trial at the moment, which is why, we kind of already know a lot about the way this is going to go. We've already had a couple of test votes where the majority of the Republican caucus in the Senate has said that this trial is unconstitutional, which makes it extremely unlikely that there would be the 67 votes necessary to convict Trump. Under that scenario, you'd need all 50 Democrats, which does seem likely, but then another 17 Republicans, and right now there's only been a handful that have even voted to move forward if it is constitutional. So it's hard to imagine that they could reach that 17 number in order to convict.
Democrats, of course, argued yesterday that it was, in fact, constitutional. Some of the attorneys, I think some of the legal arguments cited in the president's attorney's briefs, some of the scholars they refer to said that their work had been misrepresented. But Democrats also trying to now lay out the impact and, as you said, the timeline. I want to give a listen today to lead impeachment manager, Representative Jamie Raskin of Maryland, Democrat. He concluded his opening remarks telling the story of a black Capitol police officer who cried openly in the rotunda after fighting back the mob who'd attacked the Capitol. The officer said he'd been called the N-word many times. Raskin quoted the officer. Here is a listen.
I sat down with one of my buddies, another black guy, and tears just started streaming down my face. And I said, "What the F, man? Is this America?" That's the question before all of you in this trial. Is this America? Can our country and our democracy ever be the same if we don't hold accountable the person responsible for inciting the violent attack against our country, our capital, and our democracy, and all of those who serve us so faithfully and honorably? Is this America?
And that quote, Adam, just one of the Democrats' efforts to highlight, I think, the intensity of January 6th in the Capitol. Can you talk about how they've done that with videos and quotes like that one?
Right. Yeah, they're certainly trying to pull on emotional heartstrings here and try to put, you know, the jurors who are United States Senator who were in United States senators who were in the Capitol as this riot was happening, kind of bring them back to that moment, which is just, you know, it seems like a lifetime ago in a lot of ways, but it really was just a little over a month ago, and how, you know, uncertain and scary it was at times when people both in and outside the building didn't know exactly how everything was going to unfold. So they're using a lot of, you know, what has been reported in the past few weeks, a lot of video that has come out, both that was shot by the media, but also that was amateur. And they've actually been able to unearth some footage that hadn't been seen prior to today, just to show, you know, really how much worse this could have been. Of course, it did result in a handful of deaths tragically, but it could, you know, trying to show that it could have even been much worse than that had things spiraled even further out of control. So that's the positioning that the Democrats are trying to make. And, you know, it's as much about trying to put pressure on those Republicans who are in this position of, you know, still wanting to defend Donald Trump, who very much, you know, holds a grip on the base of the Republican Party. But, you know, also on the other hand, don't necessarily want to defend his actions, but also, you know, to try and build some goodwill with the public here to try and hold, you know, Trump responsible and try and ensure something like this doesn't happen again.
We're talking to Adam Wollner, deputy editor for McClatchy, D.C., looking at the top stories in national politics, looking right now at impeachment. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think of what you've seen so far in the impeachment process? Do you want the Senate ultimately to vote to convict the president and or to prevent him, the former president, and or prevent him from running for office again? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll look more at impeachment coming up and some of the other top stories in national politics. You're listening to Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our talk with Adam Wollner, deputy editor from McClatchy, D.C. We're looking at the top stories in national politics, including the ongoing impeachment trial, the second impeachment trial of former President Trump. Still time for you to join in with your thoughts on that impeachment. Are you watching or listening to it closely? Let us know what you think about what you've seen, what you're hoping comes out of all this. Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. Let's bring on a caller now. Vivian is with us in Green Bay. Vivian, hi.
Hello. Impeachment. I have written in favor of it to our 8th District House of Representatives person, and I'll be sending one off to Alberta Darling, the senator. But I'm wondering, after this is over, what are the chances that there might be a civil suit? Because I understand he hasn't done anything criminal. This is high crimes and misdemeanor. But a civil suit by the families of people who were killed or injured on January 6th. Is that a, think that might happen?
Vivian, thanks for the call. Adam, you're not a lawyer, but have you heard talk of civil suits being filed post-impeachment? I, in my reading, I haven't read everything. I haven't seen that talked about much.
I haven't seen that either. Not to say that that couldn't happen at some point down the line. I think everyone is very much in focus, very much focused on the impeachment trial at the moment. And maybe that's, you know, they'll review some other options at a later date. One option I will say that has been floated on Capitol Hill, you know, now that, you know, a lot of senators do assume that Trump will be acquitted, is this the idea of a censure that which would only require a majority vote in both the House and the Senate, that they could censure Donald Trump, and then which would prevent him from holding office again through the 14th Amendment. That's actually something that's been floated by Senator Tim Kaine of Virginia, and who's a Democrat, along with Susan Collins, a Republican from Maine. As of earlier this week, the sense was that that didn't really have enough support from either party to go forward with it. But if we do get to the end of this trial and there we don't get an acquittal, but there is a sense, you know, from enough senators that they still want to do something to sort of punish Trump or to hold him accountable, that is another avenue that could be explored down the road.
Thanks for that call, Vivian. We'll go to Diana now, calling from Blair. Diana, hi.
Hi. Yes, two quick comments. I heard after it was obvious Trump had lost the election, given an interview, that he had a lot of friends in the military. He was very friendly with a lot of members of the military. And I was listening to the BBC on the night of the insurrection, June 6th, and they caught one of the rioters shouting out after Trump gave him the orders to leave that we have to leave. He has given us our orders, so we have to leave. So who do you think is responsible for the insurrection?
Diana, thanks for the call. We're seeing in the cases of many people charged in the insurrection, Adam, they saying they thought they were doing what President Trump wanted. And I think the House impeachment managers here are definitely trying to make the case that the people who came into the Capitol thought they were doing so on behalf of President Trump.
Absolutely. Yeah, this has been a core of the impeachment managers' argument thus far, and has been backed up by a lot of, you know, both just, you know, kind of what was plainly obvious that the day of the riot, that many of the people storming the Capitol were wearing Trump gear. But then, as you know, in some of the recordings and the video that have come out since, that they did feel like they were there, you know, on President Trump's behalf. And because of that, you know, this has been another part of the House impeachment manager's argument, is that the President Trump didn't act quickly enough to sort of tell everybody to disperse, that he waited a few hours after the riot had begun before he kind of gave his most explicit orders for everybody to leave the Capitol and go home. So that is certainly a very important part of the Democrats' argument in this trial.
Well, we'll keep watching the impeachment process through the rest of the week. Want to move to some of the other stories going on. One related one I want to touch on briefly. In Georgia now, and this would be a state-level prosecution, prosecutors actually in Fulton County, Georgia, investigating former President Trump for potential multiple criminal offenses related to his efforts to get election officials and politicians in the state to overturn election results there. Just announced to, or reported on today. Adam, what do we know about that?
Right. So prosecutors in Fulton County in Georgia have launched a criminal investigation into Trump over his attempts to overturn the election results there. Most notably, he had a phone call in which he pressured the Secretary of State there to, in his words, find enough votes basically to help him reverse the outcome there. And so certainly this is something that will be hanging over Trump for a while now. And it's just sort of a reminder that even once we do get out of this impeachment trial, and even if Trump does get acquitted and Congress doesn't do anything further to censure him or punish him or anything like that, he still is going to be vulnerable to a lot of these sort of lawsuits going forward. There already were a couple filed against him in the state of New York for various different topics. Now we have this in Georgia. So He certainly is going to continue to be in some legal trouble here going forward, no matter the result of the impeachment trial.
It's our weekly look at the top stories in national politics. Adam Molnar is with us, deputy editor from McClatchy, D.C. Well, let's move on to our current president and what he's working on now. Adam, over at the House, President Biden's $1.9 trillion plan for coronavirus recovery and aid is being worked on in multiple committees. What is the latest there?
That's right. So after last week, when Democrats in both chambers were essentially able to pass the rules that are going to be able to allow them to pass this COVID relief package with a simple majority vote rather than requiring 60 votes in the Senate, which would mean that some Republicans would need to get on board. They are now able to kind of move forward with the actual drafting of this bill. And the Senate is, of course, tied up with the impeachment trial this week and probably early into next, which means that they really can't tackle any other business at the time. So now, in the meantime, the House is doing its committee work in terms of getting this bill ready. And the goal, for Joe Biden and the Democrats is to kind of have this all ready and approved by the middle of March, because March 14th is a key deadline for when some unemployment aid runs out. And that's something that they want to avoid here, to make sure that there isn't, so that everyone is covered by that. And the COVID relief package would sort of take over after that. So that work is continuing in the House, and the Senate will almost assuredly pick that right back up after the trial concludes.
And as you mentioned, they're doing it in a way that would be unfilibusterable, if I can make up a word. I'm pretty sure I just made that up. It's this reconciliation process. Congress gets to do it just, a couple times a year if they want. It has to be related to funding. It was how Republicans had passed a tax cut a few years back. Talk about this reconciliation process a little bit.
Right. So without it, it would require 60 votes in the Senate to pass President Biden's COVID relief package. And that would mean, given the current split of the Senate, where it's 50-50, you need 10 Republicans on board. And while Biden and his administration were hopeful in the early goings that they could reach some sort of bipartisan consensus and get some Republicans on board, it became pretty clear early on that they weren't going to reach that. And they wanted to move quickly on this. Like I said, they're hoping to get this all done by mid-March. They didn't want to stretch on too long after that. So they just decided to kind of forego that aspect, pass the budget reconciliation so that they can pass it on a simple majority vote in both chambers, which would mean that they would only need Democratic support here. On the one hand, President Biden has preached the message of bipartisanship and unity. And I think, ideally he would have liked to get some Republican support on this, but his administration has also pointed to the fact that while, a COVID relief package may not fare well with both parties in Congress, it does have broader support among the American public. Poll after poll has shown that a strong majority do support passing this COVID relief package. That includes Democrats, independents, and some Republicans. So that they're kind of using that as a basis to be able to move forward with this in a political sense, and just to ensure that people get the assistance that they need in a timely fashion. So that will certainly be the top priority here in Congress after the trial concludes.
Now, another attempt to use the reconciliation process was the effort to overturn the Affordable Care Act. That ended up falling short because of some defections by key Republican senators. Is there a thought that there might be Democratic senators this time around who might be sticking points to let this go through?
That's right. It's the way that the COVID relief package exists and the way President Biden introduced it is almost certainly not how it will look by the end of this process, because, as you mentioned, particularly in the Senate, when it's 50-50, just one defection would doom the bill. And, it's a relatively tight majority in the House as well. So they have to sort of balance the wishes and the demands of the more progressive wings and the moderate wings of the party. So there will be, probably some things that don't quite make it through. There was a $15 minimum wage that was originally a part of this. That's something that some more moderate Democrats have already raised objections to, may not make it through. So while that package currently stands at $1.9 trillion and features a lot of different aspects, it will probably be slightly pared down by the time that we, get to the end of this process, but will still be, a fairly sizable package and one that should be able to get the support of most, if not all Democrats in Congress.
Now, looking ahead to next week, we just learned that President Biden is planning to make his first official visit within the U.S. to Milwaukee, the Pabst Theater, on Tuesday for a live CNN-hosted town hall event. Should we read much significance into the fact that Wisconsin is first on the dance card here?
I think only that, as you all know very well, it's an important battleground state, one that was key to Joe Biden's victory over Donald Trump in November. So, you know, no surprise that that's one of his first stops here on the calendar. You know, I'm sure, you know, he'll try and highlight some of the success they've had in terms of, you know, getting, you know, more COVID vaccines out there. You know, I know Wisconsin now is rising up the list in terms of the number of vaccines that have been distributed thus far. And I'm sure he will also use it as an opportunity to push his COVID relief package and highlight, you know, some individuals or some businesses in Wisconsin that would benefit from that passing. So, you know, I would say, you know, Wisconsin is always going to be, you know, at the center of the political universe sooner rather than later. And Biden decided to do it maybe sooner than we expected.
And Adam, in our last minute or so, impeachment, obviously a big story, COVID relief. Anything else you've got your eye on that's off the radar?
I think it will be interesting to see what Biden decides to tackle next. What is going to be his big legislative push after the COVID relief package? You know, we saw, you know, kind of the first year of a presidency, you really kind of have one chance. You know, you have kind of your honeymoon period, that first year where it's on an election to push something big through. You know, President Trump did it with the tax cuts. Barack Obama did it with the Affordable Care Act. What is that for Biden? He's got a couple of options. He's talked about reforming healthcare further. He's talked about immigration. He's talked about gun control. It'll be interesting to see what he decides to make his signature legislative push once we get onto the other side of the COVID relief package.
Adam, thanks a lot for joining us again.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Adam Woolner is a deputy editor from McClatchy, D.C. We talked to him today in our weekly look at the top stories in national politics, looking at day two of the impeachment trial of former President Trump, as well as the House of Representatives working on parts of President Biden's coronavirus relief package.